Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life. You're so welcome to be with us for this ongoing series of conversations, which has been going on for a rather long time now, in some kind of miracle of life way that we are here. And every Sunday morning, we come live here on Facebook to broadcast this conversation, and then the conversation gets thrown out into all kinds of places, like our website, which is turningtowards.life, and also onto Spotify and other podcast platforms. So we have lots of people listening in all kinds of different ways. And this week, I actually want to welcome Justin. I could see a flurry of people coming through my lovely sister, Holly, because sometimes Holly and I do these little joint broadcasts in her world, more specifically around the Course in Miracles that she teaches. And so I've seen that a few people are joining from her community, which is very, very lovely. So I just want to say a special welcome to the people who have joined us just in the last few days, because I think there was a replay in something of Holly's that I was in, and we mentioned it in the video. And so people, every year there's a little flurry around this time of people joining when the replay happens. So I just want to say welcome and how wonderful it is. And if anybody from our community is interested as well, my sister's name is Holly Holden, and she does a wonderful thing called Everyday Miracles, where people join together in community on a yearly basis and have this wonderful way of studying a text between them. And I know that the community is very rich and safe and wonderful. So you can Google Holly Holden Everyday Miracles and you'll find her if you're interested. So I just want to say thank you, Justin, for being here. And as always, everybody, just so that you know, Justin and I are turning up to these things in the midst of very ordinary, everyday, kerfuffly lives, just like all of you. And we see this as a beautiful centering, shared centering practice, as well as lots of other things. And so in the midst of our kerfuffles, I want to just set the intention, as somehow I always do, to kind of come home to ourselves in whatever kerfuffles both we are in, Justin, and also everybody else who's listening as well. And Justin, thank you as always for keeping on bringing sources, and ones that mostly I've never read before. How excellent is that? And I've never read this one before, and it's a delight. So thank you.
Thanks, Lizzie. Hello, everyone. Yeah, it's a delight to be here. We started a few minutes later than normal today, Lizzie, because you and I were talking about some grand scale kerfuffles that we're in the middle of in our lives, and that feels like a very good thing that we get to do when we gather on a Sunday morning just before we begin. Yeah, it really is something to be having this conversation in the midst of a real life full of all of its troubles and complications and confusions, as well as its delights and joys and wonders, all of that held together at the same time. And I'm remembering, Lizzie, a long time ago we read Source by the very wonderful Maya Stein, which begins with the line that it looks like the sky is coming together and falling apart at the same time. And I think that's really sort of like a frame for our conversation. So welcome everyone as well from me. And as always, we have a source, a third something. There's me, Lizzie, and you, and a third something, which is a text, and then another something, which is all of us together. And this text is from a book that I'm really enjoying, actually. I happen to be reading at the moment. It's called The Second Mountain, The Quest for a Moral Life. And it's by David Brooks, who clearly wrote it in the middle of a giant kerfuffle of his own. That's where this book comes from. And I want to thank Naveen, who introduced me to this. So thank you, Naveen, for pointing this book my way. And as always, you can find the source in our Facebook group, or if you're listening on a podcast or watching on YouTube, the source is always in the notes that come with it. And it's also on turningtowards.life, where you can find all 270 something of these conversations as well. And this is called A Commitment is a Promise Made from Love. A commitment is a promise made from love. A commitment is making a promise to something without expecting a return. out of sheer lovingness. There may be a psychic return in a good marriage or from a commitment to a cause or from making music, but that is not why one makes it or why one does it. There's something that feels almost involuntary about a deep commitment. Somewhere along the way, you realized, I'm a musician, I'm a scientist, I love her, I am his beloved. And in this way, a commitment is different from a contract. A person making a contract is weighing pros and cons. A person entering into a contract doesn't really change. She just finds some arrangement that will suit her current interests. A commitment, on the other hand, changes who you are. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks clarifies the difference. A contract is a transaction. A covenant, commitment, is a relationship. Or to put it slightly differently, a contract is about interests. A covenant is about identity. It is about you and me coming together to form an us. That is why contracts benefit, but covenants transform.
A commitment is a promise made from love. A commitment is making a promise to something without expecting a return, out of sheer lovingness. There may be a psychic return in a good marriage or from a commitment to a cause or from making music, but that's not why one makes it or why one does it. There is something that feels almost involuntary about a deep commitment. Somewhere along the way, you realized, I'm a musician, I'm a scientist, I love her, I'm his beloved. In this way, a commitment is different from a contract. A person making a contract is weighing pros and cons. A person entering into a contract doesn't really change. She just finds some arrangement that will suit her current interests. A commitment, on the other hand, changes who you are. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks clarifies the difference. A contract is a transaction. A covenant is a relationship. Or to put it slightly differently, a contract is about interests. A covenant is about identity. It is about you and me coming together to form an us. That is why contracts benefit, but covenants transform.
Thanks, Lizzie. I have wanted to find ways of talking about faithfulness for a long time. It's a topic that keeps on coming up in our conversation. It's something that you bring so often, Lizzie. And of course, for me and for us, this very project is the kind of promise that David Brooks is talking about, it seems to me. But I've also been wanting to see if we could find a way to talk about what it is to give ourselves over to something in life that's bigger than us, and that one of the big troubles that any of us have with our life is living, as many of us do, in a culture which tells us that the way to live a life is to try to get what you want. You know, some of which, of course, is absolutely justified. Like, I want somewhere warm to live, and I want dignity, and I want to be treated fairly, and I want to be able to take care of the people who I love, all of that. But it seemed to me for a long time that the story of getting what I want falls so far short, because very often we get what we think we want, and it turns out to satisfy us for like 3 minutes before we find out that it wasn't what we wanted all along, and that it was a sort of shallow want. It was the kind of want that if I have a certain thing, or I have a certain status, or I'm seen a particular way. And our culture, our wider culture, seems to have made that the central thing. We're taught it again and again and again and again. And what's much harder to find out is the deep kind of fulfillment that comes from, I'm trying to see, think about how to put this, to giving ourselves over to something where what happens for us is that, I mean, it's exactly as Jonathan Sacks says, where in giving ourselves over to something with enough fidelity and openness and not knowing what might come, it changes us and deepens us. So we get deepened by the process of giving ourselves to it. Mm. And that's largely outside of the story of our culture. If you know, turn on the radio and listen to the news or read the news, which is, you know, so often how many of us get our sort of sense of what's going on in the wider culture. So rarely do we hear any stories about what it is to allow ourselves to be deepened and bigger by being in something that's big enough for us. So anyway, I found this very moving to read, and what particularly also, just as you read it to me, to us, hit me was how often what we're doing is to find an arrangement that will suit our current interests, which starts off with the I'm going to try to live a life where I'm not changed by anything that happens to me. I'm going to try and get the world to suit me. And that it just, if I just sort of imagine it as a picture of, you know, sort of like a draw a picture of the world and trying to get the world to suit me, it immediately looks like it's the wrong way around. That our job is to find our call is to find a way to enter more deeply into the world. And we usually learn that at the point that we've been trying to get the world to suit my current interests, and it's not working out, either because I get it and it's unfulfilling, or I just can't get it.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, Justin, a question's coming up with me. So the language was firstly a commitment, and then it changed to covenant. And because you're reading this book, I wonder whether you can just explain to me, maybe a commitment is the same as a covenant in this context. Is that the way that I should be treating it?
Yeah,
could I exchange the word covenant for commitment?
I think so. In the part where of the book which I've taken this from, David Brooks doesn't really explain it. He just quotes Jonathan Sacks. But I know that Jonathan Sacks is talking about when he's talking about covenant, he's talking about that very deep kind of reciprocal promise that you make to another. Which isn't about the difference in language is the difference between we make a contract so I get what I want and you get what you want, and a covenant, which is where I say, I'm in this with you. It's a vow.
Yeah.
I'm in this with you no matter what, because of who it has me become and who it has you become. And that's the basis.
Yeah. You know, interesting, the other day I was in a conversation about what business could be. Like when you enter into a business partnership with someone, because I think in so many ways it begins as a contract. And I've been musing about what becomes possible when we allow a business arrangement to be of the nature of a covenant. There might be some contractness in it, but if the heart of it could be a covenantness, what does that turn anything into? So anything as kind of contract worthy as business things, what if you injected covenantness into it? And I feel like that seems these days to be so important to me, because this whole thing about interests and arrangements that suit those interests is that life seems to turn out like really differently to those things anyway. You know, whatever we kind of sign up to on that level, maybe sometimes it protects us, but or something good comes from it because some justice is done, or yes, that has happened and does happen. And but in the everydayness, if there isn't such energy as this covenantness that we're talking about, that's always what's going to happen. And so I don't really know how to say this. If we're not in agreement on the level of covenant, we're going to have to rely on the contracts, if you know what I mean. So I feel like that transactional thing becomes the way that we live, if that's the only thing that we operate with and under. And when we enter into covenantness with one another, whether it's in business or in a marriage or in a the way we teach or circles that we find ourselves in, the community commitment that we want to make, those contracts become less needed and less relied upon because of the nature of the relationship being something beyond that anyway. So I feel like there's a way that being in covenant relationships to life affords a different kind of possibility just on the at the outset, which would mean a contract would be much less necessary or needed, because the way that we are with one another is not of that order. So when I really care about you and we are in relationship with one another that's healthy and communicative and open and committed and of the order of a covenant, the likelihood of me bringing a piece of paper out and saying to you, well, look what you agreed to and you haven't delivered on it, is quite dramatically diminished. Whereas if that's only the only thing we have between us, and that's the only recourse I have, I don't have relational recourse, that's the only thing I'm ever going to be able to use to get what I want. And it's not a very genuine thing, given that human beings change and interests change. So, you know, I've signed something between us 10 years ago, and then I try and say, well, this is what we signed, and that's not true to the relationship. We're going to have problems, because just because a contract says something doesn't mean anyone's going to abide by it. The greatest hope I think we have is to be in relationships so that we are doing our best by one another all the time. And it's funny that you said, well, I don't know if you said this, but the strap line I think that you showed us from this book, The Second Mountain, was in search of a moral life or something.
Quest for a moral life.
A quest for a moral life. I feel like even the word moral, sometimes I get a bit caught up with it, because it's like there's a right way to do things. But when I come at the word moral from the covenantness in me, it's quite different than when I come at it from the kind of contract part of me. That to live a moral life to me in this context is this invitation to consider that I could, to live morally is to live with relational decency and compassion and trying to make things work for as many people as are involved as I can in the best way that we can, which many times would make a contract completely irrelevant and completely unneeded. Like, we wouldn't even reach for it if that was the kind of conversation that we were in.
I'm thinking, as you talk about the different depths of relationship we humans can be in with almost anything, and that the contract level relationship, the one that you're talking about, that is essentially a shallowing relationship. It assumes that all there is in this exchange is your particular interest and my particular interest. And that, of course, it will be true for some circumstances and some relationships. I think that the question is, to me, is where can we and how can we deepen the kind of relationship we're in with one another and with life itself, so that we don't live a life of contracts?
Yeah.
Because you could live a life of contracts, not just with one another, you know, in sort of a business arrangement. And I love what you're saying about what would it be at such a, feels very alive and very important to me, what would it be to enter into promise or covenant with those with whom we are conducting some kind of business, making something happen in the world, and there's exchange. But clearly it's also the case for friendships, for partnerships of any kind, for marriages. It's also the case for a work that we dedicate ourselves to. And if we're living a life of contract, then in a way the expectation is very shallow, and the possibilities for disappointment are always present and always very shallow. The moment you fall, Lizzie, short of our agreement of the contract, you're in breach of contract, and then we have to repair it or walk away from one another. But if I'm prepared to say to you, if I'm prepared to find a way, and it can't be superficial, we have to do the work with ourselves and with one another to make this possible. And if I'm prepared to find a way, as we have done with this and with our friendship and with the work that we do, to make a promise made from love, in other words, I'm here, I'm in this, and my participation in this is not to do with what happens week by week or day by day, even though all of those things are up for talking about because they really, really matter. A commitment, a promise made from love is, and I use this word when you were asking about covenants before, it's a vow.
Mm-hmm.
And a vow essentially says, because you or something is important, I'm staying in. Mm-hmm. And I will allow myself to be changed by my staying in, even when it turns out to be radically different from what I've imagined.
Mm.
Now, I don't think we can make vows to things that we can't make vows to. And we can try it, try and make a vow to something which doesn't show up as a vow in us. It's not going to work because I won't mean it. And the moment it falls short, I'll go, I don't want to be in this really. After all, it's not a promise made from love. I'm out. So I don't think it can be faked. So then the question becomes not how do we turn contracts into vows, by into promises or covenants by faking them. The question is, how do we find that, or to whom, you know, to which we're really prepared to live by vow? How do we become the ones who can live by vow? And how do we find that to which we are willing to dedicate ourselves out of a promise made from love? And that's a whole different question from how do I get what do I want. It's also in a way why covenants, promises like this are transformed, because in a way we have to be ready to be the ones who are transformed by them.
Mm-hmm.
By our readiness to say, I'm all into this friendship, Lizzie. This friendship is unconditional on whether I'm getting entertained or
mm-hmm.
So just the finish the thought from where I'm landing as I'm speaking. It seems to me that there's an extraordinary, for all the reasons you said about business arrangements that could be covenants, the sort of the depth and the creative possibility in them, the care that can come in them, there really is something to be said for finding a way to live by vow, to live by promises made from love. And that's why the moral part of it is important, because we can make promises made from love to things that will destroy us and destroy everyone. And they can't be the ones, you know, they also can't be the ones to live by vow for. The ones to live by vow for are the ones which will enlarge us, enlarge our compassion, and enlarge our sensitivity to one another, and enlarge our wisdom and our creativity. And very often those aren't going to be the things that give us what a contract would give us. Because they might launch us into deep uncertainty. They might launch us into vulnerability and risk. They might launch us into the possibility of being hurt or not knowing what to do, or being confused. That's the doorway into a life on that scale.
So interesting, Justin. I also am feeling about the contract. You know, you said the covenant is I'm willing to be changed by this. For me, that brings up the fact that we actually don't know what's going to happen anyway. So I'm seeing the kind of futility of the contract in this moment, which is, you know, part of my life is spent in the world of music, and we have contracts in our business that span over like 40 years. And the ones that were made 40 years ago don't even reference the internet. So there's no way of that particular copyright benefiting from internet exploitation, for just a small example. And so those contracts were made at a time. Like, things that get made in a point in time also have this inherent limitation, which is that we don't know what's going to happen. So we can't allow for every eventuality inside of a contract anyway. And hopefully the things that, well, I can feel myself drawn to the things that we do together that have this covenant nature, allow for the fact that we really don't know what's going to happen. We can't allow for everything in our agreement between us, because we've no idea what something's going to turn into. You know, if you and I had made like a contract of turning towards life, for example, in the terms that we could have done at the beginning, it would never have taken into account all of the things that we now understand and won't ever finish understanding, because there's things to come from turning towards life that we can't even imagine. And so what gets born when we're in these covenant situations, and or anything else, just even ordinary things? It feels to me like by making a contract, I'm also limiting the possibilities of what might happen. Like, to be in that way where I think I've got all of this nailed down in terms of what could happen and what the eventualities are and what I'm going to need. For a start, who I am on the day that I sign it is different to who I am a year later. And whether I agree with myself again, I do not know. But I know what I know about myself is that I'm a different person from moment to moment sometimes. Like, my mind changes. I went to a 2-day workshop this week, Justin, on Friday and Saturday, for this new school that Vespa's going to be going to, which is a completely different education system than I've ever been exposed to, other than through my family. I was educated in a very conventional way, and this is a different way. And I tell you what, I'm changed because of it. I think different things now. I've literally been completely discombobulated and dismantled, and feel like I've misunderstood many things about life, and now I'm going to have to rebuild some understanding of the realm that we were learning in. And so me signing something now and agreeing to something now is very different to me agreeing something 3 days ago. So I feel like it's a question of identity, because, like I think this is saying, a covenant has to be big enough to take into account that I'm going to be different next time you ask me about something, or that I, and that we can be in a relationship where you don't require me to be consistent in having the same opinion every day, but that you require me to be in this with you so that we can stay abreast of each other's understanding, each other's unfolding, each other's process, and then we can respond from where we are in ourselves as well. Like, the current identity that I hold is different to the one that I'm going to hold in 3 years' time or tomorrow when something happens to me, but that we can have containers for relationship that allow us to change, that invite us to change, that take transformation as a given. That when you have a child, the next day you're not the same as you were before that they arrived, or that you and I have one of these conversations in turning towards life, and the next day my whole world looks different to me because of one of the things that we said, or that I watch something on telly and I'm not the same again because it blew me to smithereens in some way. So I feel really interested and like drawn to these the kinds of relationships, and it's the one like we have here as well, Justin, where life becomes like a very, very large possibility, rather than, well, we know what's going to happen already and I'm going to keep just doing that, and that if I change the whole thing falls apart. Like, it doesn't seem appropriate for my humanness to be constrained in that way.
So yeah, the implication of everything you're saying, Lizzie, is that for all the things that really matter, we have to find the place in us from which we're making our promises, the much, much deeper place, the something in us that isn't changing in the midst of everything else that's changing.
Yeah.
Like the deep, settled life that we are. And yes, there are contracts for certain things. We're not going to enter into a covenant with everyone in every circumstance, but I was thinking about the really big ones, a friendship, a marriage, a long relationship. The one I was most thinking of as raising children was the moment we enter into raising children, like a contract, which is, I'm in this wholeheartedly, as long as I get exactly what I want, which might be on any scale. It might be, it's easy, or I feel loved. You know, I've got my demands from it. Or it might be, as long as you stay the same or you fulfill my expectations for you. That's a contractual way of parenting. I've got expectations of you. You deliver on your side of the contract to my child, and I'll deliver on mine. Mm-hmm. It's so obvious to me in parenting that that's impossible, because children change, they become themselves, as we all do as we grow. And then if I just come to adult relationships, a marriage or a long relationship with another person, This is a lovely line in a book by Alan de Botton, where he says, if you commit to someone in a relationship, for example, if you marry someone, what you're marrying is a life, not a person who is that one at that moment in time. And it's exactly the same. Is for this to be something that really is meaningful, to get that in 5 minutes I may be different, and I'll certainly be different in a year and 2 years and 5 years and 10 years.
Yeah.
Can we live from the deep enough place in us, in what we promise ourselves to, that can accommodate all of that inevitable unfolding and change?
Well, it's so moving hearing you talk, Justin. Like, what if I can interact with this new school as that, you know, somewhere that's going to hold our family for maybe, I don't know, 14 years or 12 years or something? How can I behave as a promise to that institution as it is going to behave as a promise to me? Like, what does that mean, rather than I'm turning up and therefore you owe me something, or whatever way around that goes? And I feel like we just don't have that very much. We don't have those places in our lives that have that be a possibility in them. And so this also feels like a really challenging invitation that you're making too. And so much of the world is at the level of contract. You know, this is what I want, this is what you've got, this is how we're going to exchange, and we're not actually going to be in relationship at all, other than to agree the terms on which we're going to be doing this. So I feel like I can feel the part of me that's a bit bereft, you know, when I start seeing these things. I get this kind of ball of grief in my chest of like, oh my gosh, the world is quite taken by this. What are my interests and what are your interests and how do we contract? And so when there are places that are open to this kind of relationship, and that we can be that in our own lives and invite others into that, it makes me feel like eventually we might be able to respond to the world rather than just carrying on in all the troublesome ways that we're in at the moment. And I think that's the word that's emerging for me is response. It's like when I'm in this covenantness, you and I can make a response to whatever happens, because we haven't limited ourselves to the scope of things. And so when something happens, we can make choices that aren't limited by a set of rules that we have to follow, but that we can actually respond, which is, you know, how I also see parenting is observation and response, mostly observation, because goodness gracious, a whole human being is like, it's a massive covenant. Thank you so much for bringing this, Justin.
Yeah, well, thank you, Lizzie. What a joy to be in this conversation. And I'm heading out of this conversation to my middle one, Lior's 20th birthday today. So I'm leaving the conversation filled with the, you know, the sense of that one and all the change there has been in him and in us over these 20 years, and how much more change there is to come, and the, yeah, the possibilities of continuing to let ourselves be changed by that is a very heart-touching place to end. So thank you, Lizzie, to you, and thank you to us, and thank you to everyone, all of you who are with us. We're so glad that you're with us, and I want to keep on saying, as we say often, if you think that this conversation or any of the other ones would benefit other people, it's a couple of things you can do. You can tell people about it, you can leave us a review on if you use Apple Music, iTunes, you can leave us a review there, because that really helps people find their way. Also, you can sign up for our emails at turningtowards.life, and you can also send that to other people too. We're always glad to have this work reach people that it would benefit in one way or another. And all being well, we will be back again, same time, same place, next week.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.